The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings, salutations, and welcome to the TWBC Podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. Glad to have the pleasure of your company once again. For this continuing episode with Russell Gade, the head man behind Masterline and a whole bunch of other water ski companies, and also not a shabby performer himself out there on the water back in the day, and still could actually perform two excellent 20-second passes when pressed upon, even today. But we crack on a little bit with the second part of this episode, and when we rejoin this episode, Russell was about to talk a little bit about the effects of the pandemic, how they had a profound impact upon his business going forward. So with that, let's rejoin Russell with the answer to that question.
Well, yeah, with COVID was real difficult because different parts of the country, you know, a lot of our product is made here and even our raw materials are made here. So we're, you know, and that was a good thing. And I thought, oh, that's going to be great. We're, you know, at least most of our products are here. But then, you know, we started doing lockdowns around different parts of the country. And so that got kind of crazy for a little while. But a lot, we did pretty well to be able to keep up. We ordered ahead just took the chance that, okay, well, let's, instead of, you know, cutting back, we tried to order more product. And, you know, we didn't get all of it, but we got enough to keep us going. And then we've been pretty fortunate. I mean, we've had a few hiccups along the way, and as everybody has, but I think, you know, we do all of our yarn and our ropes that we were able to keep up with, as long as we could keep people making them. That was our toughest part, was the labor. We didn't have a whole lot of shortages in the materials because that's made for us locally. And then we have the braiding machines here, so we make most of that ourselves. So,
yeah, because I mean,
we have control over that,
because you can make up a pretty good stock and to keep you tidied over, because I mean, like, ropes aren't exactly like bananas or anything like that. I mean, they don't perish very, do they really?
I mean, they do have a lifespan, I guess, but not, you know, it's a pretty long lifespan. So you don't, especially if you don't put them out in the sun, you're going to be good. So as long as you keep them in a, you know, air conditioned warehouse, they're going to last quite a while. But things do dry rot over time. So, you know, if you're going to store them, you can't stack them up for 20 years, which I do see people, they'll pull out a rope they bought like 20 years ago and then wonder why it broke. it's like, you know,
snaps in the middle of your 30-meter pass, yeah. And you wonder what's going on here, you know.
That's one thing that's funny. I mean, it's just like, you know, rope in the grand scheme of things, a rope is pretty cheap for water skiing, you know, when you think about it. And but boy, when you break a rope, I mean, it can be pretty catastrophic, you know, fall.
The knot in the rope isn't the only knot that you're going to have to deal with after you take a
break your ribs or have some other kind of fall. I mean, the risk in breaking your rope is pretty great. So it doesn't happen much with, you know, our rope. And that was one of the things I developed when I took over Masterline. And I remember talking to Chris Lapointe at one of the US Opens. We were sitting there and he's like, yeah, I count how many times I ski on a rope, and I use it 12 times and I throw it out. But if I try to push it to 13 or 14, it'll break. And that was back when at the time we called it 60 strand, or they were on quarter inch ski rope. And so we're like, this is crazy. Why are we at such a low tolerance? I mean, there's no room for error, and the rope should last longer than that. So we ended up coming up with an 80 strand rope. And, you know, I think that was a game changer now, because you really don't have to worry about breaking a rope. I mean, now it's if you're breaking a rope, you're using an old rope that's too old, but you're not going to break a new rope out of the box that's at this point, because now we're double the, you know, a quarter strand was breaking at almost 900 pounds, but you look at the guys are pulling 900 pounds. So if there's any, you know, the tolerance has to be, if you have a one that's not so great, it's going to break. And now we're at 1800 pounds. So you doubled it. So you're definitely increasing lifespan and definitely protecting it for any kind of nick or anything you get in the rope. You have a little bit of leeway before you break it. So we don't see that very often now, that you break a rope unless somebody's just done something silly.
Yeah, like pull another boat directly before you pull a ski, you know
yeah.
if the boats are stalled out in the middle of the lake or run out of gas, you know, I mean, I mean, I've seen some people do it, you know, and then they wonder why that rope doesn't have any more life in it after doing something like that, right?
Exactly. Or you'll tie them up with their truck and pull, you know, to a tree and try to stretch them out. But then, you know, unless you're using a gauge, you don't know how much pressure you're putting on. If you're putting on, and now I'm drawing a blank for the term, but there's a term where you know, you're stretching plastic. So if the plastic gets overstretched, you know, polypropylene comes back, it stretches and comes back. Polyethylene kind of deadens out, so it'll stretch and then stays where it is. But polypropylene will stretch like a rubber band and then it comes back. But there's a point where you could stretch it too far and then it doesn't quite come back. You don't know, but you can't really see that. So if you overstretch a rope and you tie it to a tree and you pull 900 pounds without, you know, you're putting too much on it, and then that rope is may not have the same characteristics as if you had just skiers skiing on it. Mm-hmm. So that's why we recommend don't go tie it to a tree unless you're going to gauge it. But if you start getting more than 500, 600 pounds on it, you're not really sure what you're doing to the rope, and they're going to be inconsistent. And you can put three on a car and do that, and they're going to all measure out differently after you're done, versus if you take three ropes of ours out of a right off the shelf and go out and ski and you put 10 sets on them, they're all going to come out, you know, dead on. But that's what they're designed to do, because they're designed to have 500-600 pounds basically stretched, you know, as a skier skiing on them, and then end up in tolerance. But so we recommend that, you know, don't do crazy things with the rope, and you won't have any issues. But that's I think that was a big game changer for skiing, because, you know, when you had a guy like Chris, I mean, that guy was a beast, you know. And he and Bob, you know, they every time you had no idea if they were going to break a rope. You know, you're just sitting in the boat, like, you know, with your hands over your face waiting for that rope to come snap.
Give me a hockey helmet and a mask, you know.
Yeah, so you know, we don't have those issues anymore, so that's at least that's one plus.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's helped progress the sport forward a little bit. And if I know nothing else about you, your products kind of address a need as they come around at specific times of improvement and innovation within the sport. I mean, we can talk a little bit about trick skiing, because, I mean, gone are the days where a tow trick skier would use the same handle between each passes. Now they're coming up with like a mini handle, a lighter handle for tow tricks, because you hardly ever use the handle for tow tricks unless you're getting the strap off, you know, at the end of the pass.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the little clip that goes into a hard shell for that, you know. Kind of expand upon those innovations within tricks, because this is going to lead into my next question, which is innovation with ropes for slalom. We dealt a little bit going from 60 to 80, but now there are ropes, lightweight ropes for kids, and then there's the optimized rope, which has been the topic of discussion. But let's go with tricks first.
Okay, well, to go back to tricks, I mean, yeah, I played a lot with ropes after seeing Amrick trick, and realizing, man, tight, you know, the quicker you could tighten up the rope or versus having a slack rope, it's makes a difference. And we played with all sorts of stuff after that. And that's when the Spectra stuff started coming out with. So I think we were the first to really use any kind of Spectra in water skiing, because we were trying to see if there's other things that could help us ski a little bit like Amerik without having to slow the boat speed down. So we started using the Spectra rope, and that then eventually that started working its way into wakeboarding. Because that's when we first started went to wakeboarding. We realized, man, the rope got so long, it's twice as long as the trick rope now. So, you know, that you really feel the stretch the longer the rope goes. So, and then in the, as you've talked about the handles, I mean, Kyle Peterson was the one that really started off with that specialized toe handle. He had cut his ankle real badly doing tow line front. And I think it was before the Worlds or something. And so we decided we try to, hey, it's like, why don't you get a neoprene sleeve you could put over your ankle so you can protect it. And then we made him a specialized handle, a toes handle that could go, toe strap that could go over his, the neoprene sleeve on his foot. And then also, you know, we eliminated the handle because it was just going to be something he had to put on land because he couldn't kick it in on the, you know, while he was skiing. So he'd have to put it on the back of the boat and then hop in. But after he did that and you started realizing, wow, it's kind of nice without the handle. And I went with, I fought that for a long time and I didn't, you know, embrace that at first. And I went to two masters and I, like the first masters, I wrapped in for a toe echo and my, the handle on the toe strap caught in my shorts and totally messed me up on a toe echo. And I thought that was a one-off thing. Never happened again. I skied a whole another year, never noticed it. We went to the Masters the next year and the same exact thing happened again. I'm like, it, you know, those, and that's kind of what I've learned is like the weird stuff really will show itself in tournaments. And it's a good reason why you want to ski events before a big tournament. And it's also, you got to really take what learn from those events, because if that's happened once, it could happen again. And the big tournaments, when you're really going hard and things are, you know, you're nervous and all that, things that are not so noticeable in practice show up. So that's when I switched to that handle. And then I realized, man, this is way better. I don't have to worry about it. And it just on other tricks as well. I used to get a big bone bruise in my shin when the handle would hit me in the shin on toe line O. And so that handle really helped. And so we, you know, that's kind of how that evolved. And people now, you almost never see somebody use a regular trick handle for toes.
Or a handle at all, you know.
Or a handle, yeah. It's just the little toes only handle that we make, and then that's what you see for just about everybody tricking. And then, you know, it's kind of the same thing with the skis. You know, people started switching skis because they started realizing, hey, we want to ski for toes and we want to ski for flips, and we started separating our feet a little bit more for hands. They used to be really tight up against each other, but then I realized you know you could get more leverage if you could separate them just a little bit, and it helps for flips and body overs. So, but then your foot's in the wrong place for toes.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's why that kind of evolved. As far as the slalom ropes, I mean, I guess you said you touched on the kids ropes. Well, that's something we learned from Anna. And then I guess, you know, Anna and Brooke and the kids when they were Neely and when they were all starting, that we noticed with the big rope, I'm sitting in the boat watching. I'm like, golly, every time they go around the turn, you know, they were skiing with 75-foot rope and you got the big rope and they go around the turn and the rope would catch in the water. And then they would be on a good cutting edge and it would just whip them off the cutting edge. And then they would be flat skiing into the first wake. And then the rope, you could see the weight of the rope swinging around. So it's like, oh, let's go back and just try to build something a little smaller and just see how that works. And, We did that, and it was just a game changer for the kids. I mean, they really took off once they got the right rope. And then you saw, I mean, Brooke just tore up the records with the smaller rope. And I really noticed it with Anna, she was skiing amazing. And then we had to go to team trials, and I was like, oh, man, she's going to have to go from 32 to 34. And so I was really worried about the boat speed change. And I just started pulling her 34. And really, she didn't change that much. She was pretty much running almost the same score with the vote speed faster. I was like, oh, that's good. And then, but never thought about the rope. And then we go to the tournament. She couldn't run a pass with the thick rope. So just because she was so tiny and the rope, so the rope was making more difference than the 2 mile an hour vote speed. So that's when we really realized that, hey, you know, you got to have a specialized rope for the kids, and they're so short. So, and they're so light that there's a good chance that the rope's going to dip in the water. So that's how we came up with the two different versions of those ropes so that the kids could progress, because it wasn't only the boat speed that was affecting them. It was also the, just using that big, heavy rope. And so, I think that's a big portion of why the kids' scores just took off. I mean, they're just at another level now. You know, you're running 38 off when you're in girls one. It's, that's kind of crazy, you know. So that helped with that rope. And then as far as that, we did that 80-strand rope, which was a big change at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just more of a, hey, let's just build a bigger rope to make it safer. And that was what that was. And then recently we developed our optimized rope, because we started realizing that, hey, the action of the rope makes a big difference too. You get a rope that you've had too long, and that's something Andy always talked about as well. You get a rope that you've had too long, and the rope goes dead. And there's a life to the rope, or elasticity to the rope. And as that goes dead, that life and that springiness it changes, and your skiing changes a little bit. And he was always one that pushed people to say, hey, you know, make sure you're getting a new rope and stay, you know, try to switch them out, because when you go to a tournament, you're not going to get an old dead. You're not going to get an old dead rope. Most of the time they're pulling out a new rope.
Mm-hmm.
And that liveliness to the rope is important to your skiing. You can't just have a, you know, we've tried it. We experiment with Spectre rope, and you realize, man, that's just not the way to go. It's just so dead. And even in just the handle, we noticed that. I mean, even Chris Parrish had complained to us too about having back issues when he was just using a Spectre handle, and he went back just to regular polypropylene. And
because with Spectra, you feel everything on the water, don't you?
You feel everything. And even just in a 5 foot section of handle, you're like looking at it, it's like it can't be that much more stretch in the polypropylene handle, but there's enough give to help you. And so then I think one of the people that kind of brought this to our attention, and we had noticed it, but we started thinking about it more, was Matt Reaney. He would skiing at a ski school, and you know, I think Whitney had an older rope of ours, and then had a newer rope. And then there was a batch that we had gotten different. And then Paige had a rope, and everybody that was using Paige's rope was struggling. And then one day Paige decided to use Whitney's rope, and all of a sudden her skiing was like way better. So Matt's like, hey, I noticed something's going on here. So then we started looking into it to see how we could control it and make changes to the rope. And that's how that kind of started. And we were able to design what we wanted to do is design a rope that would give you that. Let's see, if I back up a little bit. One of the things I noticed with Trix with the Spectra was that the rope was either all tight or all loose. There's no in between. It just would go hard so quick, and then it would go totally slack. And I realized when I went back after using Spectre a little while, other than having shoulder issues and other issues, that when I went back to the Poly E, I noticed, hey, when I loaded the rope, it loads and it gets tight. But as I release from the wake, there's a little bit of time when the elasticity is coming out of the rope, that the rope's not slack yet, but it's also still taut enough that I can feel it. And so I like that control more, because after I release, say, to do a ski line O, you're loading the line really tight. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you leave the wake, it would go totally slack. And I'm like, I don't have any balance in the air because I have no control.
Notwithstanding the fact that having the line in the water would basically discredit the trick in some instances in the eyes of the judges, right?
Yeah, but it was more about the control that I noticed it. And then I noticed another time skiing, actually I was skiing with Matt, and I was trying to do mode 5 front, and it was when Zero Off came out, and you could start choosing the letters. And I was, I could not make a Mode 5 front. And I think I was like on B2 or B3 or some, or maybe on the C's or something. And we started talking about it. And Matt's like, you know, maybe it's, you know, the boat is shutting down. It's reacting so quickly and shutting down so quickly that you're losing the rope. And I know, and then we went back to A, and I was like, all of a sudden I was making them all. And I'm like, wow. So it kind of reinforced my thought of like how the rope was working with the Spectre is also kind of how the zero off is working. And that was something that Andy said to me one time too, is he chose the zero off letter based on how he comes into the ball, how his edge changes and coming into the buoy, more so than he chooses it for how he comes out of the ball, which was almost opposite of what a lot of people at the time were talking about. Everybody was wanting to control the zero off based on how they felt at the finish of the turn. But he was wanting to control the edge change going into the ball and how that affected the rope and his control on the outbound portion. So I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And that's what how we tried to, the ideas that we started to incorporate with the optimized rope. We wanted to be able to, the more dead the rope is, we noticed that the finish the turn, you're finishing the turn, the rope's coming tight quicker, mm-hmm. and it's not letting you finish the turn and get into your lean. It's trying to stand you up. So coming into the wakes, it's trying to stand you up quicker, but also on the other side of the wake, when it goes from, as you go to make your edge change, it goes from tight to the slack much quicker.
Yeah.
Whereas as if you have that elasticity in the rope, as the rope, you're changing edges, the rope's loose. I mean, the rope's contracting as it, you know, you've expanded it through the wakes. It's contracting, but it's still taut. It's not super tight and loaded, but it's also not slack. So and that's what when we started playing with the ropes and different things, and people say, oh, I feel like I have better control into the buoy. The other thing is that the smaller, lighter skiers like Anna noticed, oh, with the optimized rope, man, my back, like all the girls were having back issues. And as soon as they started seeing with the optimized rope, all that cleared up. And so they were, that was really a benefit to them. And the skiers like Nate and Dane, who carry speed through the turn, they're not having a big, massive turn and then stopping and then waiting for the rope to slingshot them across. If you're skiing with that kind of style, then that's where the pro rope is probably a better choice, because when you have that little pause there and then you got to wait and then the rope's going to slingshot you across, then you don't want that much stretch in it. But if you're skiing like Nate, you're trying to hold speed, you're trying to, or Dane, you know, or Brooke, the optimized rope, they're using the rope to their benefit. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, depending on, so it depends on the style. Some, you know, your style maybe won't lean to getting a benefit from the rope, but you're going to benefit from a stiffer rope that's not going to let you fall over in the turn. But if you can ski with that technique, then, you know, guys like Nate or Dane, and mm-hmm. you can see it in Dane's skiing's really taken off. And
He's,
you know, he's using that optimized rope and his style is working with that rope, and it's just, you know, working really well. And that's kind of what our intention was with the rope. Not everybody loves that rope, but I've had a lot of people that, you know, like Dane and like some of the girls that are skiing with it, they love it. And Regina likes that rope. You know, she was one of the ones that was helping us design it.
And obviously a major proponent of having it put into tournaments and having it having the rules kind of worked to have a provision for that rope in tournaments such as the World Championships, which is the next thing I want to address, you know, because the officials at that time wanted to go with just one type of rope and one type of rope only, which was the pro rope. And then you offered up the optimized rope, and the officials were kind of differing a little bit as to whether they put it in. I'm sure you were aware of the whole deal going forward at the World Championships, you know, but would you care to comment on that?
Well, yeah, I don't know exactly the details, but I do know that, you know, our intention all along was we were going to offer the optimized rope. And with the rule change recently, our intention was to offer both ropes, but our primary rope that we wanted to showcase is the optimized rope, and that's the one we're selling. That's the one we want to try to have at the tournament. So we expected to have both ropes and offer both ropes. So we didn't want to, you know, so it'd be fair for more skiers, especially at the time with COVID and people having a difficulty getting ropes, that we just figured it's going to be better to offer both ropes. So if you're in Australia and you couldn't get an optimized rope for some reason, or New Zealand or wherever you're skiing, you're not going to have to worry about not, you know, you could choose either one, that, you know, the one that's been around for a long time or the new one. But somewhere along the way, I guess the organizers decided, hey, let's just go with one rope. We want to keep it easier. We don't want it to be complicated, I guess. And they made a decision to choose the pro, but, you know, that wasn't really communicated till the last minute. So I think it threw a lot of people off, because some people were skiing with the optimized expecting it. And we were telling customers from us that, well, yeah, we're going to have the optimized because we're the ones sponsoring the tournament. So we thought we would have the option for that. So there was just, I think, a miscommunication there. But then they did get in there and did offer the both ropes that they, you know, they did do that before the tournament started. They decided they were going to offer both, which was the right thing, because then, you know, depending on where you're coming from, you've been training on something and you don't have to change off of that. And it's, you know, certainly... Whitney likes that optimized rope, and she was killing it. I mean, her skiing was, at the time of the Worlds, she was skiing great. And I think that rope works well for her style of skiing. And you could see how, you know, she was definitely ready to compete. She'd really made the last few months has really had her skiing has stepped up another level. Unfortunately, she took that fall, or that was going to be a great competition between her and Regina and Jamie.
And obviously Whitney won the Malibu Open just a week or so prior to that competition, you know. So obviously the rope is definitely working out for her there. And it's also kind of helping out a little bit with her recovery as well, because, I mean, after that crash, she had to take a few weeks off and had to get back into the swing of things, so to speak. And when you've got a rope that's comfortable to ski on more than anything else, it can only help going down the line, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's something that, Chris had an injury this summer. Chris Parrish had an injury this summer with a lat, torn lat. And he said that, we had talked about it and how he could get back on the water. And I said, go back and try this rope, because I think this will help you. And he said, oh, yeah, it definitely helped him to not have that, you know, to be using such a stiff rope. So I think it's definitely a helpful thing if you have any kind of tendonitis, or you've got back problems. It can be a big help to people, because a lot of times you just, you know, you're taking such a hit skiing, and you got to remember, you're starting, you know, especially for a skier, like a top level skier, the toll it takes over on your body for the season is something else you have to take into account. Something might work great for a week or two, but it's not about, you know, it's about consistency over time is how you improve. And you need to have something. If you can't ski for 6 months, a couple of weeks every year because your back's out, you know, you're going to improve a lot more if you can stay on the water and make it through the season. And I think, you know, when you're skiing big tournaments, you're taking big hits and you're doing it week after week. Like at the end of the year last year, we had a lot of big tournaments back to back. Your body's taking a toll, and you got to remember that, and you got to be able to rest and recover. And if you can have a rope with a little bit of forgiveness in it, it's going to help you if you can ski with that, you know, if your style lends to that. But, you know, those people that have that smoother style also are people that are going to be able to ski for a longer period of time. They're going to be at a high level, you know. I just look at Nate, and I see him every day. He's running 41, like when he's here, because he skis on the same lake. When I see him in town, and, you know, even just last week, it's freezing cold, no one's skiing, he's running 41 off. Like, but he could do it all the time because he's not taking a big hits when he does it. You know, he's running it so smooth, and his style lends himself to that. Or like Dane, you know, he just, they can, they can ski a lot because they, you know, skiing at a smoother technique. So,
and to quote the rope, to kind of quote a phrase a little bit there, smoother than a well-buttered banister, I guess. But yeah, that's certainly Nate all along. And I mean, he's been one of the greatest slalom skiers out there. He is the world champion. He's the world record holder, you know, and probably credit to your lines to help him towards that aim. But lines and ski ropes aren't the only thing that you've got going on. I mean you're involved with the Quantum skis, you're involved with the Eagle wetsuit. I don't anticipate a name change for the company, you know, anytime soon, I would imagine, despite the fact that Facebook recently created Meta as like an umbrella company for all of these other entities below. But going besides that, tell us a little bit about your involvement with Quantum Skis, and also more recently your acquisition with Eagle Wetsuits.
Yeah, Quantum is a we started making a ski. I was skiing with on the D3, but there's certain things I didn't like about it. I felt like we could do better with it. We had started off a while back. We had made Exocet for a while. I don't know if you remember that. We were making skis and trick skis then.
I remember those jump skis too.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce, they were the first long jump skis. Bruce was one of the guys that was leading that way in development of the longer jump skis, and along with Boo Boo was the guy that kind of started that whole trend, because I think he broke his trick ski at a tournament and they decided they'd mount it on the front of the jump skis just to see what it would do. And that was when it kind of, that was at least his trick ski came into use something. But yeah, that's kind of the idea. So we were making those, and then eventually we had a guy in town that made them, but that didn't, he kind of phased out of his manufacturing, and then at the same time people were, you know, the costs were going up, and we had just finally decided, oh, it's not really worth it to continue on with that. But then it came back around a few years later. I'm like, man, that the Exocet ski I had, I really liked. And then I wanted something different. So we developed that the Quantum ski. That's been a great shape. I mean, a lot of top skiers have been using them. I mean, Neely uses it for toes, and Anna's on it, and Alexi, and we've set some world records on that ski. And so we've made the trick ski. We haven't really expanded that line too much. We just have done the trick ski, and we stuck to that. And then, you know, several years ago, I don't know, it's been 5 or 6 years now, I guess, we've owned Eagle. We purchased Eagle, and that's been a good line for us. It's complemented what we do at Masterline, and given us more of a package thing for people to buy. You know, you can buy a vest and a handle and a rope, and you need more products. You know, it's just hard to compete when you're just doing a rope and a handle. So we do more of a complete set of products for tournament skiers. So with the vest and the barefoot suits, the show ski market. Show ski is one of the few things that have been growing. And show skiing has been a good market for us. We make just about all the suits for those teams, and all the pro teams too, like Legoland and stuff like that. We make suits for, and Cypress Gardens. So, that's a big part of our market there, is the show market. And then we do barefoot suits have been a big seller for us. Those are two niche things that you just can't go to China and just order a barefoot suit, because they don't even have, a lot of them don't have the machinery to do it, and they don't have we're using old machines that are hard to find, but you know, they're German machines that they don't even make anymore, so we're having to retrofit these suits. But they're also something that just can't be knocked off, because they're, you know, the machines now, they don't make these big Mauser machines with the big stitch, you know, tape stitching anymore. So That's something that's kind of a niche for us, and that we've done well with, I think. So that's the product line, is Eagle, Masterline, and Quantum right now.
All right, yeah, and I'm looking actually at your Masterline website. You're doing bundles and stuff there with the dynamic trick ski, the rear binding, and the sleeve there, and very, very reasonably priced, I would say. But I had something towards the end of last season that that you were looking to acquire just the distribution rights of another Trixie brand. Is that true, or is that just an unsubstantiated rumor at this time?
No, actually, Masterline is not doing that, but I'm involved, and I'm with four of us that have gotten together, which is Randy, who works for Masterline, Bob, and also Sergio. And so the two main partners in it are me and Sergio, and we are doing the KD distribution for North and South America. So of all the products, KD makes, combo skis. They make the titanium slalom ski, which Martin Bartowski and Diego Font both skied on at the Worlds, which has been a popular ski down in Australia. That's where KD has been. A lot of the focus for KD has been down in Australia, because Wayne Bryant is the one that kind of got that all going again. I think in Europe, KD is a pretty strong brand.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have taken on, the four of us have partnered and created a company called Pure Fun Sports that's going to be the distribution for KD. So, Sergio's marketing those down in South America, and we'll be pushing that in Canada and in the U.S. So, and it's more than just a trick ski, but it's, definitely they have a good trick ski. When you look at the people that are in the finals at the Worlds, I mean, a big portion are either on Quantum or KD. So KD's a, Pato's on the KD and
I think Jake is on the KD as well, isn't he?
No, I think Jake, I'm not sure what Jake's on. I don't think he's on the KD, but I think the other fonts, Pablo's on a KD. The Georgies have been on a KD, and I think they've been on a Quantum as well. And there's quite a few skiers on them, and at least quite a few in the top, on the podium and top five, at least it's skiing on that ski. So that Josh Bryan, of course, is on that ski. So there's some good skiers on that ski, and that's been a popular ski. So we decided we wanted to try to push that brand here. KD, the Red Line, has been a popular ski. That's one of the biggest selling slalom skis of all time. And that's been around forever.
Yeah, so, that's like a classic name from back in the day, in the halcyon days of the sport in the late 1980s. Yeah. Whoever was riding the Red Line was towards the podium, the top of the podium. Sammy Duvall were head and shoulders above everyone else at that time.
Yeah, well, you had Sammy and Carl. Yeah, those were the two big name kidder Red Line skiers back in the day. But yeah, that brand has, we have a wide body slalom ski. We got a full range of slalom skis and new wakeboards and, the good product. They got a good selection of boots as well. And so we're going to try to push that forward here and see how that goes. I mean, there's definitely a demand for it. And we've seen that so far. So, it should be good.
And I mean, going forward, I mean, we'll try and wrap up the interview here a little bit there. I mean, we've covered an extremely large amount of ground, but towards the end of last season, your daughter, your eldest daughter, Anna Gay, second world trick title, the only person in the world championships.
That was a third.
I'm sorry. Forgive me on that one. But I was about to say that that in that trick competition, she was the only female tricker to go over 10,000 points in both the elimination and final. So you must be extremely proud with her third world title now.
Oh yeah, definitely. She's an amazing skier. I don't know too many other people that I've seen compete as well as she does. I don't know how she does it, but I mean, she has just been amazing in big tournaments and has an incredible record for the amount of time, for how long she's been skiing. I mean, she's won two junior world championships, two under 21 world championships in tricks. She won two under 21 world championships in overall. And so you know, and then she's got three world championships in tricks. I mean, like, and she's only 21. I mean, it's just amazing the what she's stacked up in that little bit of time. And yeah, just she had a great year. She won the Masters, won the King of Darkness. I think she won just about every round she skied. So she's, you know, she's just a really strong person mentally and handles the pressure better than anyone I've seen. I mean, just is very good under pressure. And I think it's more her perspective, her outlook towards it. I mean, skiing really doesn't define her. So I don't think she takes it too big when she loses, but so she's not really afraid of it. You know, she's not afraid of making a mistake, but since she's not afraid of doing that, she doesn't dwell on it and then is able to stay in the positive a lot easier. I don't know what it is, but I think that's part of it. So she's, yeah, it's been fun to really
probably gets that from her mom. If you're not too sure what ticks in her head, then it must come from somewhere else.
I think, I don't know. She just, yeah, she's been really good at that. And then, yeah, so it's been fun to watch her do it, you know, ski and do what she's done, because it's really been an amazing run. And I think sometimes it's even underestimated what I think she's accomplished. And you know, you hear about some of the top skiers, but Anna gets, I don't know, for what she's accomplished in that time, she sometimes gets slighted. So it's like pretty amazing to see what she's done. And then even Ryan, you know, he had a great year. He went to a collegiate, like that was an amazing trick final at the collegiate nationals. And he finished second, so a close second. But, you know, the top five skiers were all from the world. You know, you had Pato and you had some really, really top skiers at the collegiate nationals. So to see him finish second was really exciting too, because he likes to ski, but he's not into it like Anna is, but he's got the talent and he's definitely likes the collegiate format. For him is perfect.
Indeed. I don't think there's anyone out there on planet Earth who skis or has the opportunity to ski collegiately that comes out of that experience with a negative point of view. And yes, and Ryan in the 122nd pass that he had at the collegiate nationals, a trick 67.50, you know, which is, you know, just taking into account that that's just one pass, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's a fantastic effort, finishing only just behind Felipe Franco and just ahead of Guillaume Tetrio. And let's not, I mean, we mentioned right off the bat, you know, Ella Gay. I mean, she's had a good season as well, right?
Yeah, she's done really well. She's got a ton of talent, and if she just puts her mind to it and really wants to ski, she'll get there. But she got to ski a Junior Worlds this year. That was really fun to see her qualify and compete at that. And I think, I can't remember how she placed, but she did pretty well. You know, she's tricked almost up to 5,000 points. So she's 12. She's getting there. And she does slalom and jumps also. So it's been fun to coach the kids. And that's what's, you know, really been the fun part about them skiing, is just the bond that you create with them and coaching them and traveling around with them and all that. So that's really been a fun experience.
Yes, and Ella Gay, as a matter of fact, finished only slightly adrift from the top 12, trick in 43.20.
Yeah, she just missed the final, yeah.
Yeah, you know, a little unfortunate there, but I mean, she's 12, for crying out loud. I mean, she's trying to punch above her weight, you know, against skiers that are like 15, 16, 17 year old, you know, so good on her. I mean your family is absolutely stacked with tricking talent. And I mean, when you sit back and look around and take stock of what you have, I mean, you must think, how did I get here, you know? I mean, and taking a you know, take a deep perspective upon what you've achieved and what the future holds.
Well, it's definitely a love of skiing, that's for sure. I mean, we've put a lot of time into it and we've enjoyed the sport, and you know, it's been a great family sport for us. So something we all do together. So that's, I think that makes it a lot easier. And that's one of the things that's been great about us. We've been able to do it all together. So
excellent stuff. A true family sport in every way, shape, or form. Now, typically what I ask of our interviewees in the TWBC podcast is, do they want to give a shout out or thanks or acknowledge people that have gotten them to where they are right now? So I'm going to give you a few moments to do just that before we round off this episode of the TWBC podcast.
Oh, man. Well, I think I did mention a few of those there. It's so many to thank, you know, so many people that have helped me get to where I'm at. But, you know, certainly my wife has put a lot of time and effort into supporting what I've been able to do. And then, you know, my kids, especially nowadays, you know, with my skiing still, I've let it take a backseat to their stuff now. But there was definitely a time when they, you know, were having to wait on me. And then, you know, my parents, they put a lot of effort into helping me get going in their skiing. And my dad was a good skier that, you know, inspired me to do it. And then, you know, I've had coaches such as Bill Peterson and Randy Schoner and people like Corey that have helped me along the way a lot. You know, those guys have some of the skiers that like Tori and Corey, and that gave me tips and stuff as I went along. And then, you know, Drew and Sergio and just a lot of people out there to thank. It's hard to remember everybody, but yeah, I guess Tangy also and Mike Ferraro also had a lot of influence on my skiing. So,
all right then, okay.
I'm sure I forgot some, but that's yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that you have a list of people that you all want to thank But I mean, that list could go on and on and on, you know. But I mean,
you
mentioned some of the people there, and I personally thank you for taking the time. You know, I was earmarking about an hour for this podcast episode, and it's about an hour and 30 minutes. You know, we took a deep dive into a lot of things, but great to have you on board. That has been Russell Gay. This has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. So until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.